was a book that she had written down all the sins of he and his fellow brothers and sisters throughout their life, the things that they had done wrong. It had the sin and had the date. So Jim opened up the first page and he read off the first name of his sister. He read off some of the dates, some of the sins, things that they had done, and turned the page. He read the sins of his brother and the dates that he had done things. And his mother walked into the room and noticed that Jim was going through this book. And he said, "Mother, what's on the next page?" He said, "Well, Jim, you're on the next page." And he said, "Well, Mom, please don't make me turn the page." He said, "Jim, turn the page." So Jim turned the page and there was nothing written on the page. She explained to Jim that the day that he was baptized, she ripped out the things that he had done and thrown away the page, and it started anew. And the reason why his brother and sister's sins and dates are still in there is because they had not yet obeyed the gospel. She said, "Jim, always remember that the Lord comes first, because your brothers and your sisters have forgotten, but yet you have remembered, and don't ever forget." And with that thought, I want us to realize that that's the God that we have. The God that, once we obey the gospel, he tears out that page and we start anew. And so this evening, I want us to think about heaven. The song that we just sang, taken from Philippians chapter 1, verse 23. And in verse 21 it says, For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell. For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. I had the thought of doing this lesson whenever I attended my grandfather's funeral, which was about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And it kind of brought things to a head for me, to kind of focus on the more important things in life. First of all, what is heaven? Well, in the New King James Version, the word heaven is used 532 times in 502 different verses. The Jews recognized that there were three levels of heaven. The first level of heaven would be the birds of the air. The second level would be the stars, the moon, and the sun. And then obviously the third level, which is known as the third heaven, which is spoken of specifically in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, which is where Paul is shown things, and he is speaking about his experience. And we know that the first two heavens are to pass away. We find that in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 10. And the thought I want us all to leave here with tonight is, heaven is the place where either all of us here will or will not be when this life comes to an end. It's as simple as that. Either you will be there or you won't. I want this lesson to be one of encouragement. I do not want to talk about doom and gloom this evening. I want to mainly focus on heaven. As you see there, I have some pictures of me and my grandfather, me and Uncle Lewis. And if you notice that picture there where Papaw is wrapped up in about 100 different blankets, that was the time that Papaw was put in the hospital because he broke his foot. And my cousin Cliff was at the hospital, and Papaw had complained about how cold he was. And so Papaw was kind of a smart aleck. So he kept on asking for more and more blankets until he was wrapped up completely, and he looked like he was from someone from the Middle East. So what is there? What is there in heaven? Well, number one, we need to understand that God the Father is there. Number two, God the Son. Number three, there's a cloud of witnesses. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, the chapter following what we call the famous Hall of Fame of Faith, says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." to understand that we're going to a place where we can live eternally with the one who, as it says there, he endured the cross. He, despite the shame of it, he still endured it. He had the option of calling what the song that we sing, 10,000 angels, to come to his rescue. But he chose not to, for our benefit. Revelation chapter 21, there's endless day. And then one of my favorite songs that is not in our songbook, or in either one of our songbooks, is Mansion, Robe, and Crown. Our mansion, our robe, and our crown that God has prepared for us. John chapter 14, verse 2. Revelation chapter 6 and verse 11. And one of my favorites, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 through 8. Running the race, fighting the good fight. That song I just mentioned, these are the lyrics. I'm going to read the lyrics. It's kind of hard to see on the screen. The song goes as follows. I'm going to trade my earthly home for a better one, bright and fair. Christ left to prepare a mansion for his children in the air. I'll join him in that land where tears nor sorrow can be found, and I'll receive my mansion, robe, and crown. The chorus reads, Lord, I want a brand new mansion, robe and a crown in glory. There I know that peace and love will always abound forever. Let me be among the saved to your throne surround, and I'll receive my mansion, robe, and crown. The weather there is always fair. There is sunshine day and night. No cold and no rain will fall there, for the sun shines ever bright. I'll need no heavy garments. I'll just wrap my robe around when I receive my mansion, robe, and crown. In the last verse, my head is bowed and bloody now from the work that I've tried to do, but one day I'll be rewarded with a crown so bright and new. I'll wear a smile so bright, for there'll be no cross for a frown when I receive my mansion, robe, and crown. What a glorious thought. I sometimes get caught up in things that don't mean anything on this earth. I get caught up with school. I get caught up at work. I get caught up in myself. And then I listen to this song. Songs like An Empty Mansion. The songs like Never Grow Old. And I sit down and I read the lyrics over and over. And if I know most of you have noticed, I sing Empty Mansion and Never Grow Old many times, and many times it's a tearjerker. Because it reminds me of the things that, even at such a young age as myself, there is something much better than this life. As Don mentioned this morning, I cannot imagine what it feels like to be an atheist. I spoke to, again, my cousin Cliff about a kid that was a member of the Church of Christ. His father's name, Billy McBay, spoke at my aunt's funeral just recently. His son, I grew up with, was a member of the church for years, and then decided one day, I guess, that he no longer believed in the Lord, no longer believed in God. And he went into the woods one afternoon when he came home from school and took his own life. And me and Cliff sat down and we spoke about what it means to be an atheist and what the logical conclusion of atheism is. The logical conclusion, I believe, of atheism is, what is the point of living? And I think Billy McBay's son came to that conclusion, as smart as he was. What is the point of living if there is no hope of heaven? What is not there? There's no sorrows. There's no night. There's no sun and there's no moon. And as Revelation chapter 21, verse 27 says, there is nothing that defiles or causes an abomination or lie. Revelation chapter 22 and verse 1 says that there, in that place, there is the pure river of water of life. There's no more death. I picture some of the most clear springs that you can look straight through the water and see the very bottom. And how serene and how peaceful that is to look at those things. There's no more tears nor crying. And over the past 6 weeks, I've shed many tears and I've cried a lot. But it's much more peaceful and much more comforting to know that those family members that have gone on were Christians. There's nothing old there. All things are made new. Nothing old. The swiftness of life. This life, this body that we live in is not meant. It's not built to last a long time. Time is not on our side. So just like Joshua did, we have to determine who it is we are to follow. What did Joshua say? We all sing the song. As for me and for my house, we will serve the Lord. James chapter 4 and verse 14. It reads, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Chapter 4 of James is speaking about how God resists the proud and how he gives grace to the humble. The humble person recognizes that you live from day to day. You don't live from week to week. You don't live from month to month or year to year. Instead, you live from day to day because you never know. You never know if we'll be here tomorrow or if we won't be here tomorrow. And the things that worry us the most, we can't control. Talks about how we can't control one hair on our head. Can't control how tall we are, how short we are. We can't control it. What we can control is how we live our lives in service to God. Psalms chapter 39, verses 4 and 5. It speaks there about the body. And as I have quoted there, it says, that I may know just how frail I am. A Psalm of David, beginning in verse 4, it says, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but vapor. It's a life, like I said, that is not built to last. We've been placed here on this earth to do the things that God has given us to do, the commandments of God. And sometimes I believe we overlook that. Our lives measured up to the greatness of God. I'm about to read Isaiah chapter 40. And as I read it, I want you to understand that Even the most rich men in the world, and even the men who consider themselves to be the greatest in the world, in terms of the glory and greatness of God, they're nothing. Beginning in verse 5, and I'll read a little bit here. So please follow along if you'd like to in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 5. It says, the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. The voice said, cry out. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all its loveliness is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades, because the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever. O Zion, you who bring good tidings, get up into the high mountain, O Jerusalem. You who bring good tidings, lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up, be not afraid. Say to the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord God shall come with a strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom and gently lead those who are with young. Now, beginning in verse 12, I want you to pay attention how there's a shift in thought. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? That is the hollow of God's hand. Measured heaven with a span and calculated the dust of the earth in a measure. Weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord, or as his counselor has taught him? With whom did he take counsel, and who instructed him, and taught him in the path of justice? Who taught him knowledge, and showed him the way of understanding? Verse 15, Behold, the nations are as a drop in a bucket, and are counted as the small dust on the scales. Look, he lifts up the isles as a very little thing, and Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor its beasts sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted by him less than nothing and worthless. To whom, then, will you liken God? Or what likeness will you compare to him? Our life compared to the greatness of God. What measures up to God in the grand scheme of things? You see all the rhetorical questions there that are asked. Who has counseled God? Nobody. Who has taught him the path of justice? No one. Who has showed him the way of understanding? All these rhetorical questions that we all know the answers to. The answer is nobody. Know your place and prepare now. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 29 talks about the wisdom of older men and their age and the gray hair. Young men like myself, remember, it will not be long before we are the old men with the gray hair. It seems like yesterday I was 12 years old, 10 years ago. And now I'm almost 23. In a few months, I'll be 23 years old. Ecclesiastes, in the 12th chapter, speaks about the days are coming when the things that you could do years ago, you will no longer be able to do. But most importantly, the one thing that you can do, you can remember God. Things we need to consider. One of two things will happen to all of us. Either we're going to grow old and leave this earth, or Christ will return while we are still alive. The second point I have there, one of the greatest fears to me is having eternity to think about what went wrong while being in torment. I think about the situation where Lazarus is looking across the gulf, and there that one is that was praying, Lord, I'm glad I'm not like him. That one's begging just for a drop of water to be touched on his tongue. But I think the greatest downfall of the one that is being tormented is to look up or to look and see that his brothers are in the same boat that he was in while he was here on this earth. And that, in and of itself, to me, is a scary thought. To know that I could possibly bring others down with me, and there's not a thing I'll be able to do about it once I'm gone. Matthew chapter 7, possibly one of the most quoted chapters in the Bible. Like we said the other day, I'm sure every sinner in the world knows what Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 says. Judge not, lest you be judged. But not many people understand the verses 13 through 22. That not everybody is going to heaven. And not everybody who attends church is going to heaven. Not even those who attend the right church are all going to heaven. There is much more to it. There's going to come a day whenever you're in judgment, and as Don spoke about this morning, you're going to say, Lord, Lord. But he's going to say, Depart from me, for I never knew you, ye worker of iniquity. We are one day closer to heaven or hell than we were yesterday. Yesterday is gone, today is here. And as Paul says, today is the day of salvation. There is no comparison between heaven and hell. As I've heard many times within the past six weeks, the death of a Christian is better than the day of his or her birth. Job chapter 1 verse 21 says, "Naked I came from mother's womb, naked I shall return. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all things, like Paul did, you learn to find contentment. 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 10 talks about the coming of the Lord. And the sad part about it is not many will be prepared when that day comes. It says in verse 10, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up." Verse 12, it says, "Looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with a fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." I spoke with Nana the other day, and we had a conversation about how this life, the sorrows of it, the letdowns, how there's no way that this could be it. There's no way that once we are dead and gone, that nothing's going to happen. No one could ever convince me that this is as good as it gets right here. Because if this is as good as it gets here on this earth, what a poor, pitiful life we are living. But we have a hope. And as Don was talking about this morning, not the hope that we hope the Razorbacks win 6 football games this year and get to a bowl game, but the hope we have is a reality. It's something that we can grasp, we can have. The hope of reaching heaven, that promise that God's given to us if we do the things that He has commanded us. And lastly, if you miss heaven, you have missed it all. I won't name names, but I sat down a long time ago with someone really important to me. They decided that they were no longer going to do what God wanted them to do. And I said, "Are you okay with this?" They said, "Yes, I'm okay with it." I said, "Well, just remember, if you miss heaven, you have missed it all. You can live it up here on this earth. You can live a life where everything is great in your eyes. But there's going to come a time where you start getting older. And the thought's going to come across your mind, one of these days I'm going to die. And either you're going to have a thought of comfort, or you're going to have a thought of fear, of being scared. The thing about death is, we tend to know the least about it, but it is the one thing that is guaranteed in this life. There's nothing appealing about hell. Luke chapter 13 and verse 28 talks about the gnashing of teeth. I want you to picture the gnashing of teeth there. Think about if you were to strike your hand with a hammer, coming right down on your thumb. And in pain, you grit your teeth together and you grind your teeth out of sheer pain. Now think about that pain for eternity. Pure torment. There's no upside. You're tormented day and night forever and ever. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 10. But on the flip side, you have heaven. 1 John chapter 5 verse 4, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 57. Death, where is your sting? O death, where is your victory? Correction, 2 Corinthians chapter 5 verse 57. Well, that's not the right chapter. Do what? 15. 1 Corinthians 15. That's right. Verse 56. The sting of death is sin, and the strength of the sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. The question tonight is just how important is heaven to you? I have written here in the front of my Bible a lesson I did a long time ago, and it's been a while, about the road to glory. And the question I have written in the front here, I believe I took it from Psalms chapter 16, verses 11, Isaiah 35, 8 through 10, and Philippians chapter 3 and verse 1. The question written down is, who would sacrifice glory if they knew how great it was? Well, I believe, I think most of us here just know just how great that glory that God speaks about in the Bible is. But so many today sacrifice that glory that He's promised us. They've obtained it, and they've given it right back up. And that's where many of them will end up one day. Where the gnashing of teeth is, and the tormented day, and not forever and ever. What is the comparison? There is none. If there's any way we can help you, whether it be from the prayers of the congregation, or whether or not you've yet to name Christ as your Lord and Savior, whether you need baptism, whatever it may be, we're willing to help you in any way as you come forward and stand and sing.